The first session that we have today is we have three talks from people who are working who work within the community, who have been responsible for the for issue of training in various different ways, and are among the key players in the kind of reforms and innovations that I mentioned earlier. Just like you have outside, you have descriptions of the fuller descriptions of the committee members of the committee members and of the speakers and of our charge. So then, rather than take time to read something that you could read, let me just very briefly introduce the speakers and let them give things that you can't read. Each of them will speak for about 20 minutes, and then we'll have a chance for question and answer. So it's my privilege to introduce Steve Marin from Mercyhurst College in Erie, Pennsylvania. Steve has a long career in the intelligence community and has been one of the people concerned with the innovations around the Kent School, CIA University, and other things, and has been a major player in working the international studies community to deal with these problems. So we've never met, so let me ask. Oh, there, please. Okay, please come. Welcome.
Good morning. My presentational style is a little old school. You know, I prefer the senior seminar approach, where you can sit down and talk with the students. The lecture thing is a little bit more of a work in progress, so we'll see how this goes. My name is Steve Marin. I teach intelligence at Mercyhurst College. My career in the intelligence community was not that long. It was maybe 4 years or so. But what I've been studying intelligence or doing intelligence for about the past 15 years or so, there's a certain amount of continuity in terms of subject matter, particularly when you go back decades, when you study what was written about intelligence analysis in the 1940s, 1950s, 1960s, and so on. As I was coming up with my remarks, I was trying to think, what is a good analogy to try to explain the academicians, particularly the one who has a certain amount of continuity in terms of knowledge over time, the academicians' approach to the study of intelligence and the intelligence community's approach to the study of intelligence. And in what I consider to be a throwaway line, it's kind of akin to dealing with, from an academic's perspective to the intelligence community, dealing with an amnesiac with short-term memory problems. The person doesn't know their own history. They don't know why they're there. They don't know what they've done. They don't know what they've tried or haven't tried. They don't know what's worked and hasn't worked. And they continuously make plans for the future that they forget. And I kind of see over time, the University of Maryland's 2006 report on the future of intelligence analysis is one of those that is high quality but rarely cited, just because I think it was a wonderful opportunity for people to kind of share thoughts on what to do about the future of intelligence analysis, and then people forgot. So I kind of see my role as a reminder to the community of where they have been and what they have done based on the literature that's out there. And what I'm going to do today is provide an overview of all things intelligence and academic. And in order to do so, I'm going to touch on three things. I'm going to talk about the recent creation of intelligence schools in academia, the ones that incorporate variants of analytic training in their programs. I'm also going to talk about the kinds of analytic courses that are taught and the skills that are developed through these kinds of courses within intelligence schools. And finally, I'm going to talk about the value of intelligence schools to the intelligence community, and especially when intelligence school is able to combine intelligence education or intelligence studies and training components as well. So first things first, what are intelligence schools? Intelligence schools are new. It's a relatively recent creation, past 15 years or so, 20 years. In comparison to intelligence studies, which has been around for a really long time, intelligence studies is the study of intelligence itself. It's a way to gain greater understanding and knowledge about all aspects of the intelligence field. It's traditionally embedded within political science or history programs, although recently there has been intelligence studies that is built upon the academic disciplines of anthropology, sociology, psychology, and communications. It's using theoretical foundations to understand what does intelligence do. The primary focal point for for developing and presenting this kind of research is the Intelligence Studies section at the International Studies Association. This was a group that was created in the mid-1980s by people like Roy Godson and Richard Schultz, and it provides a venue for the presentation of research primarily within a security studies framework. It's usually political science and security studies oriented. Examples of the kind of people who teach intelligence studies-like courses in academia would be Art Hulneck at Boston University, Locke Johnson at the University of Georgia, Fred Hitz at the University of Virginia, and perhaps Amy Ziegert at UCLA, although I don't know if she would describe herself as an intelligence studies scholar. Another example might be Diane Snyder at Princeton. The term intelligence school, in contrast to intelligence studies, is a relatively recent creation. And the term is my own invention, and it's built upon the concept of medical school, law school, journalism school, nursing school. It's a school. It's a place to acquire a pre-professional educational foundation, the how to do the work of the professional, how to do intelligence analysis. Those are intelligence schools. And the creation of these kinds of schools accelerated after 9/11, mostly due to a higher demand for intelligence analysts. So there was a higher demand that academia met by building intelligence schools. And examples of the kind of schools that are out there, Mercyhurst, Notre Dame College, University of Mississippi, building one, Embry-Riddle, Johns Hopkins, American Military University, Henley Putnam, and the list can go on and on. I would venture to guess that there might be 15 or 20 different intelligence schools out there. The one of the easy ways to kind of make the distinction between intelligence studies and intelligence school, the ultimate end product of intelligence studies is a PhD. It's usually embedded within political science, but it's a PhD. The ultimate end product of an intelligence school, some kind of a professional doctorate, similar to a JD or an MD. Now, here's an interesting discussion that I don't think the intelligence community is fully engaged in. At least two intelligence schools in academia have started to talk about potential and value of creating professional degree-granting programs, professional doctorates. And I think that might be something that the intelligence community should start engaging in, because quite frankly, I'm not sure if academia does it on its own, it's going to be worth that much. I think it really needs to be done in coordination and cooperation with the hiring authorities. So where do I fit in? My role is bridging the gap between intelligence studies and intelligence school. I am an intelligence studies scholar whose primary emphasis is creating knowledge about intelligence. I research, I write, I think. I am a former practitioner. I spent 4 years at CIA, but I left the world of practice to go into the world of academia because I value building knowledge. I think that the more knowledge you have, the more context, the more understanding, the greater ability you have to improve practice. And my PhD dissertation at the University of Virginia, under the advisement of Philip Zelikow, examine the intersection of intelligence analysis and decision making. And on the upside, I finally finished it. So on Sunday, I actually will be walking at graduation at the University of Virginia. So my wife required that. So. You might think that there's a natural relationship developing between intelligence studies scholars and intelligence school professors. And there are synergies there, but the relationship doesn't come naturally. The same disconnect between theory and practice that occurs in a lot of other domains also occurs within the intelligence domain. So even though everybody is talking and doing intelligence, you still have this disconnect between the scholars and those who teach how to do it, either the trainers, the educators, the intelligence school people, or however you want to describe it. My role in that is as a translator. I take the theory and make it acceptable to the practitioners, and I take the practice and the issues that they're wrestling with and try to make it accessible to the academics or theorists. And I do this through my affiliations at both ISA and the International Association for Intelligence Education, which is where a lot of the intelligence school people are getting together and talking about how to teach intelligence, how to teach intelligence analysis. So the second part of my presentation, we may actually finish in about 20 minutes. The second part of my presentation is to talk about intelligence schools. What do they teach and how do they teach it? And the first thing to recognize about intelligence schools is they're all different. It's hard to generalize about them. It's hard to come up with some aggregate conclusion about what they teach and how they teach it, which makes this part of my talk kind of hard. For the most part, intelligence schools have developed without government funding or assistance, and there's no government mold for what to teach or how. And that's both good and bad, because the freedom to experiment, each intelligence school does it its own way, and that results at the same time in both excellence and mediocrity, simultaneously. I would describe intelligence schools as an academic experiment in progress, or perhaps, as I've done previously, the Wild West of academia, with a little bit of the gold rush thrown in. And the gold rush comment is because there's a certain amount of try it and see if it works, or build it and see if they'll buy it. And the build it and see if they'll buy it is sort of a mix of experimentation, entrepreneurship, and chutzpah. It's the private sector in the form of academia, colleges and universities, meeting the needs of the intelligence community without much help from the intelligence community, financial or otherwise. And because of that lack of support and assistance, each intelligence school capitalizes on its relative comparative advantage. Sometimes the comparative advantage is in the form of individual professors in the programs. So the knowledge and expertise that individuals bring to the table. And examples here would be Will McGill and his emphasis on risk analysis at Penn State, or Noel Hendrickson and his emphasis on critical thinking at James Madison, or Phil Jones using his CIA experience to help build the program at Embry-Riddle, or Phil Davies, who's at Brunel University in London. He's an intelligence studies scholar who embeds the program with his knowledge and expertise. Or another example close to home for me, Chris Wheaton and his experiments in analytic transformation at Mercyhurst. And so in some cases, for some programs, the individual knowledge and expertise of the professors, particular professors, really does matter. In other kinds of programs, it's an aspect that's almost unique to the program. An example here might be American Military University. It's a fully accredited, but both regional and national accreditation that teaches its courses in an online format. That enables them to reach all the way across the country to professors or instructors with unique skill sets or knowledge and offer courses on a wide range of topics that relate to intelligence or intelligence studies. That allows American Military University to offer much broader course content than almost any bricks and mortar physical school could ever do. That's their comparative advantage. Johns Hopkins created a master's degree in intelligence analysis. At Johns Hopkins, they built it kind of at this border between law enforcement and national security in its School of Public Safety Leadership. They took a part of the school that was its strength, and they overlaid on top an intelligence school component. Another example here, Richard Immerman. Richard Immerman at Temple is thinking about creating an intelligence school there that is built upon or relies upon the strengths of the criminal justice program. So each school is different, and it's very hard to generalize across intelligence schools. But to some degree, all schools incorporate analytic training into their curricula, because that emphasis on how to do intelligence analysis is what makes them definitionally intelligence schools. So what do they teach in these programs? They teach, at the beginning of the process, they teach collection. They teach how to acquire information. They teach how to evaluate source reliability and validity. Some schools teach about certain kinds of collection mechanisms like HUMINT or SIGINT. Not so much on the applied side, but on the more intelligence studies side. For those who teach to the applied skill set, it's mostly open source. That's on the front end. On the back end of the analytic skill set, there's the writing and briefing skill set. And almost all intelligence schools have some courses on writing and briefing, because it's that significant to you have to be able to communicate your analysis. And just to give an example of the significance of new intelligence schools, there's a book out titled Communicating with Intelligence that was written by James Major, who taught the writing course at the National Defense Intelligence College for many years. And this new book, Communicating with Intelligence, is essentially a textbook for intelligence schools on how to teach writing and briefing. Intelligence schools they're large enough, there are enough students in them that they have textbooks, and they're more on the way. Tim Walton's book. Tim Walton is an instructor at the was an instructor at the Kent School, CIA's Kent School. And he has a book that's coming out that's essentially an introductory primer for beginning to teach new intelligence analysts. Another kind of subject that's taught in intelligence schools is critical thinking and argumentation. And the predominant academic work in this area that I'm aware of is David Shum's 1987 two-volume work on evidence and inference for the intelligence analyst. Now, unfortunately, this work isn't easily accessible to either the practitioner or the typical intelligence school student. This is a significant scholar in the field, but there needs to be a translator. So who's done the translation? Well, inside the community, there were some people who did translations back, I guess, about 10 years ago. But more recently, David Moore, who acquired his master's thesis from the National Defense Intelligence College, had a book on critical thinking and intelligence analysis that was published by the college also. And in that book, it kind of breaks down what critical thinking involves and helpfully includes in the appendix NSA's syllabus for a course on critical thinking, which those intelligence schools have found to be quite useful. This is how NSA teaches critical thinking skill set. Of course, you don't have to teach critical thinking explicitly. You could teach it embedded within a subject matter course. And that's how I teach critical thinking to my students. There is not a critical thinking course at Mercyhurst. What you have are a variety of questions and subject matter oriented courses that embed those kinds of issues, that thinking skill set within them. So there are different ways to teach critical thinking, even within different kinds of intelligence schools. Now to the meat of, I think, what I was asked to talk to, structured analytic techniques. Intelligence schools teach those, and the most frequently taught is Dick Hoyer's analysis of competing hypotheses, or ACH. Why? Because that's one that's taught in almost all the government training programs. Other techniques are taught as well. But the actual mix of techniques depends very much on the school, the program, and the instructor. And I want to plug two of the resources that intelligence schools are using. One is the Fearson Associates, Randy Fearson's Purple Book, the Handbook of Analytic Techniques. And it's available for purchase on Randy's website, and he's probably very glad I plugged that. And I'm actually planning on assigning it in a course over the summer. And the second one, there's an online version of this bouncing around those who teach intelligence. It's the CIA's Tradecraft Primer, Structured Analytic Techniques for Improving Intelligence Analysis. This was intended to be kept in-house, but made it out of the house. So now it's bouncing around the ether for those who want to teach that approach. These are the same techniques that are taught within government training programs. Academia is sort of developing its own, but really what they're doing is piggybacking on top of what government is already doing. And that means that what intelligence schools are teaching is going to have the same strengths and weaknesses as what government training programs are going to have also. Now, I want to do a step back evaluation of the utility of these techniques for a moment. Apparently, I can get through two-thirds of my presentation, but not the last third. We'll leave that for later, perhaps. But I do want to talk about from the intelligence studies liberal arts perspective on intelligence education, perspective to intelligence education. The problem with teaching these kinds of structured analytic techniques within an educational environment is that you're not also teaching the future prospective practitioner the reasons why they're employing those techniques. You can teach it in this kind of how-to school solution approach, which may not necessarily be appropriate in an educational context. And the best example here is ACH, which, if you think about it, really is a version of hypothesis testing built on a falsification model as applied in the medical practice of differential diagnosis from which it was derived. You have applied hypothesis testing in medicine, now adapted for intelligence context. It's being taught to intelligence practitioners, and they don't know. You have people out there who know ACH, and they don't know hypothesis testing. And that just absolutely amazes me as somebody who's familiar with social science methodology. How can you know a technique but not know what it was built on and why it's employed? So I see ACH as kind of a real-world example of what Mary McCarthy talked about 10 years ago. She gave a talk. She was the NSC rep. She was the person on the NSC staff responsible for intelligence policy. About 10 years ago, she gave a talk, and she described the need for social scientists to develop what she called methodologies for dummies, or the easy-to-apply, quick-to-learn, stripped-down version of social science methodologies for busy analytic practitioners. And if you look at the techniques that are embedded within these government training manuals, you'll see social science methodology in a stripped-down methodologies for dummies format. You see hypothesis generation in brainstorming, outside-in thinking, red team or red cell analysis, and alternative futures. You also see the creation of alternative hypotheses in devil's advocacy, team A, team B, high impact, low probability, and what if analysis. And you see hypothesis testing in ACH. And I think there's value for practitioners to be taught the methodologies for dummies because they need to be able to apply them in a very fast kind of a way. But I think if intelligent schools are going to teach these kind of techniques, they really do need to embed them on top of the framework of the kind of qualitative and quantitative social science methodologies that I would learned in UVA's political science program. So that the practitioners, the future practitioners, know the why rather than just the how to. Give me a minute count.
One minute.
Decision making now.
I think maybe the best way to end is that there's a value to intelligent school for the intelligence community, and that value is in the opportunity to outsource training. It's to outsource training, but also more than that, it's to outsource education. It provides a platform for its future generalists to acquire both the knowledge and skill set necessary to do the work that they will be engaged in the future. And it's also an opportunity for the future experts to, particularly through some kind of a graduate certificate course program, to obtain the practitioner skill set that can be taught outside of the classified domain. Therefore, keeping within the intelligence community only those resources that are needed to teach the classified stuff. So think partnership between academia and the intelligence community. There's another aspect of that partnership that's significant, and that's the partnership between intelligence school, intelligence studies, academia, and the intelligence community. But I think I'll leave that for later discussion. So thank you very much.